Good day, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Scotty Thomason.
Good morning. My name is Scott Thomason, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and within 2 days, an MP3 file and presentation will be available for replay on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. If you have not joined the e-meeting, please do so now. The e-meeting URL is available on the Technical Exchange site. If you're unable to access the e-meeting, you may access the presentation from the Technical Exchange site or by going to any IBM.com site and typing the number 700-6694 in the search box located at the very top of the page. You may also instant message the co-moderator, Dick Hamilton, by clicking on rjham@us.ibm.com in the e-meeting attendee list, and he will assist you. Today's presenter is Prasad Amandi. Prasad is a team lead for WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 support. Prasad has been working with the Message Broker product since the first broker release, MQ Series Integrator. He has been leading the support team. He has been leading the support team for all Message Broker releases, including the latest, WebSphere Message Broker version 6. Today's topic is WebSphere Message Broker troubleshooting and common problems. It will include a PowerPoint presentation followed by a question and answer session. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, the lines will open for questions. At this point, I would like to turn it over to Prasad.
Thank you, Scotty. Welcome to the webcast, WebSphere Message Broker Troubleshooting and Common Problems. My name is Prasad Amandi, and over the next 60 minutes or so, I'm going to talk to you about troubleshooting and we'll discuss some of the most common problems that we see on a day-in, day-out basis. The information I'm going to talk to you about is pretty much applicable to all supported broker releases, which is WMQI 2.1, WBIMB version 5, and the most recent WebSphere Message Broker version 6. I really hope this information that I'm going to talk about would help you in maintaining a healthy broker environment, and will help you resolve problems quickly in case if you ever encounter any issues. Due acknowledgments to various trademarks, and next slide, please. The structure of this presentation is quite simple. We're going to start off with a quick look at the introduction, which I'm not going to spend much time. It's a single chart that I have to talk about various components and their interactions and the connectivity going back and forth between these components. It's important to get a good understanding of this when you're looking at troubleshooting the product. And we'll move on to discussing several troubleshooting techniques available for you, and then discuss a handful of common problems. And finally, I've listed out a few websites which are a wealth of information for users working with the broker. Next slide, please. I'm just going to wait a minute for the screen to refresh here since it's a pretty colorful picture. This is the single foil I have about introducing the product, and it hasn't changed much over the releases, though I must say that, yes, there's been a name change recently with all the previous releases leading up to the latest WebSphere Message Broker version 6. The key components, let's start off with the tooling. It's a single toolkit that will allow administrators and developers to work with the broker product in the sense where the administrators would be able to start or stop message flows or perform deploys. And the developers can develop their message flows, message set activity, and code their logic. The toolkit communicates with the second key component here, which is the configuration manager, which is an administration component, and the configuration manager manages a broker topology which could contain one or more brokers, and the toolkit acts as an MQCD's client. It uses a ServerCon channel called systembrkconfig to talk to the configuration manager. Up until recently, the configuration manager was restricted to a Windows platform only. However, with WebSphere Message Broker version 6, configuration manager can exist on all platforms as the broker product. And also, the other change, the other improvement, enhancement in version 6 is the configuration manager no longer has a dependency on an external database. And to talk briefly about it, in WMQI 2.1, the configuration manager needed two databases, mainly to store administration data and the message repository and message flow information, while with version 5, moving over to Eclipse-based toolkit, the message set and message flow information is stored under the Eclipse workspace, while the configuration manager still needed a database which was used for administration purposes. With version 6, the configuration manager does not have an external database. It uses its own internal repository. The configuration manager in turn communicates with the main runtime component here, which is the broker, and it uses MQ series channels to talk to the broker queue manager if they're located on different servers or if they're located on different queue managers. The broker is the main workhorse, if you will, the main component that actually runs your flows, runs your processes, your messages. And it in turn, at a physical level, if you look at the process listing on a working broker box, you'll see a BIP service process, a BIP broker process, and one or more data flow engine processes. The BIP service process is exactly what it's called, a service process to start the broker and ensures that the broker is running. The BIP broker process is what we call as an admin agent. It's an administration agent that talks to the configuration manager, receives messages, and appropriately forwards them to the data flow engine processes, which are the physical processes for the logical execution groups. The execution groups, as you probably know, run the message flows, and message flows themselves run as threads within the execution groups. So at a physical layer, what we're looking at is the data flow engines running message flows as threads processing messages, which they could be receiving from any of the supported transports. The most common transport used, though, is MQ series transport. And working on the logic that you or your developers have coded, and again on the output, forwarding to the destination according to the transport that's being used. The little rectangle box at the bottom is a representation of a message flow, where the green circles are pretty much a notation for the nodes. Right, with that, moving on to the next oil. For those of you referring to the PDF file, we're on page 8 here. Let's move on to troubleshooting WebSphere Message Broker. One of the key information that you want to look at when you're when you want to troubleshoot is the logs. You definitely want to keep an eye on the logs. And so let's talk about the logs and where they're located. The broker product uses the operating system provided logging facilities, and so on Windows, it would be the EventViewer application log. Now, besides using the operating system provided logging facilities, the broker also uses, the toolkit uses or has a log page or a pane, or it has an alerts window or an event log if it's version 5. mainly to report administration messages. So it's a good idea to keep an eye on Windows Event Viewer application log, more so when you're starting or stopping the broker, to ensure that it is running successfully. And if you're doing deploys, or if you're starting or stopping your message flows, it's a good idea to look at your log pane if you're running WMQI 2.1, or the alerts window in the toolkit for version 5 and version 6. Now, under in the toolkit for version 5 and version 6, there's also an event log, which is in, under domains, and you'll need to actually open, double-click and open that log, which would show very good information if, when you do deploys or when you perform administration activities with your broker. On Unixes, information is recorded to syslog, and syslog needs to be configured. It's pretty basic configuration that is documented in the information center. If you're running a ZOS broker, version 2.1, you need USS syslog to be configured, and messages get reported to the USS syslog. However, if it is WBI brokers version 5 and WebSphere message broker version 6, messages get reported to the job log for the address space. Besides event logs or operating system logs, which report administrative activity and will greatly help you ensure that the broker is running successfully, for developers, there are several troubleshooting techniques available. Let's start with a simple trace. There are multiple levels of tracing available in the broker product, though I will restrict myself to talking about user-level flow trace only, just because this is meant for the users. The command is mqsi change trace, and as you can see, I'm not going to read the entire command. It can be, you can trace an execution group level or a message flow level, though I would usually recommend a message flow level tracing, just because this tracing is meant for the users, and it gives pretty easy to read information, and tracing at a flow level will allow the developers to look at information like, where did the message go? And this is a question at times that might come up in terms of, where is my message? I mean, more so if you have multiple destinations in your flow. And you can easily find out looking at a user trace. Besides that, the timestamps in the trace will clearly show the time taken per node, and also it can be used to perform some basic performance analysis of your flows running in your environment. Do keep in mind, though, that this trace is circular, and the trace file size can be tuned with the -c option. I believe the default is it starts with 2 meg, and you can increment it. The unit is in kilobytes on the -c option. Moving on to the next foil, this is a simple trace snippet that I wanted to share with you, which gives good information, shows the message flow name, shows the node name, and of course there's your timestamp there. The thread ID is something that's just for information for you, though if you report a problem to us, we might use it to correlate it with other pieces of information we request from you. If you look at the exception, you can clearly see that it's a data type mismatch problem, and this is exactly the type of problem that can very easily be addressed by capturing a user-level flow trace. Moving on to the next foil, and again, for those of you who are looking at the PDF file, we're on page 11. Yet again, a second trace snippet. This is, I wanted to show this to you to kind of let you know how you can look at performance from a simple user-level trace. This was a real scenario that got reported to us where the flow was performing really well in a test environment, giving split-second responsiveness, and the users just migrated it to production where it was terribly slow, where each message was taking 10 seconds to process. And looking at the user-level flow trace, we see that the message is going into a compute node called insert underscore audit underscore DB, and it's taking about 10 seconds in that one node. And looking closely at what's happening there, there's an extensive database interaction, and obviously the performance, the database in production environment was obviously different than the database in test. And this is the type of performance information that you can gather by running a user-level flow trace. Moving on to other troubleshooting techniques that are available for developers, Message Broker provides a trace node, which is a primitive node that a developer can drag and drop into the message flow, and it requires very basic configuration and provides a snapshot of the message as it's being processed through the flow, and it can be used for validation. Depending on how you configure it, you can configure it to generate the entire header and the message tree at that point of time when the message is being processed, or you can also use it to trap an exception list and code so you know what the exception is that has occurred within the flow. As I was saying, it's pretty basic configuration you have to provide where the trace node needs to write the output, which could be a flat file or a user trace, where again we're going back to user level flow tracing. Besides trace node, there also is a debugger, which is pretty extensive. It can be used to introduce breakpoints within a message flow, and also can be used to debug your ESQL. It displays, when a breakpoint is hit, it displays the complete parsed out message tree at that point, and also allows you the flexibility to modify your message at runtime. You can modify some of the fields and play your message through to see how it behaves. Moving on to the next page, which is page 13. With version 5, WBIMB version 5 and WMB version 6, there's new functionality introduced called accounting and statistics, which is which can be used from a troubleshooting point of view. The functionality of accounting and statistics is meant for reporting message flow information, very specific details. I'm going to show you a snapshot of a record in just a second. It provides excellent information about message flow, node, terminal and thread level usage information, including details like CPU usage and so on and so forth, based on which you could implement chargeback if you would like to, but also you can use this information for from a performance measurement point of view. There are no changes really needed to the message flow. You don't have to change anything or introduce any new primitive nodes. It's enabled through a simple command called MQSI change flow stats. And the output can go to a user trace, or you can subscribe using a subscription queue and receive publication messages in XML format. And of course, if it is EOS, this can be generated as SMF117 type records. The next foil, I think there's a delay in the refresh here, so I'm going to wait a minute. Okay, maybe it's just me not seeing the page. Right, I'll keep going. We're on page 14, which shows a snapshot of accounting and statistics, and I've highlighted a few details. I'm so sorry, I apologize. I'm having a problem with refreshing my screen, and I'll keep going though, assuming that you have access to the PDF file, and the PDF file, in case you need to access it now, can be downloaded from the TechNote number 7006694. I really apologize for the technical problems that we're having, and I hope you can access the PDF file. And on the PDF file, we are on page 14 under troubleshooting. I'm just going to give a minute, so for those of you who would like to access the PDF file. Right, I hope all of you have access to the PDF file. We're on page 14 under troubleshooting, which shows a snapshot of the accounting and statistics record. I've highlighted a few attributes there in red, mainly the message flow name, start and end times. And if you look closely, you also have information like CPU, max CPU time, total CPU time, and of course details like total number of input messages that have been processed. Right, that concludes the troubleshooting functionality, and we're going to move on to the common problems, which is page 15. The most common problem that we see, and I should say I suppose on a daily basis, is my deploy is not working. The fact that we see this on a daily basis doesn't necessarily indicate that this is a product problem, but deploys are generally have a lot of working parts to it, and there's a lot of dependency on the environment, and so it's very a common problem to encounter where deploys might return timeout exceptions or might not return errors or might end up in infrastructure problems, and we're going to look at each one of them. The most common problems that you might see with a deploy is, as I started off by saying, these are timeout messages, BIP2080E, BIP2066E, which pretty much indicate that the execution group failed to process the deploy message because of insufficient time, and likewise the broker was unable to retrieve a response, which is the, I believe it's the BIP2066E. Further on, the other messages that could occur is a broker encountered an internal exception, or the last one, BIP1536E, which is configuration manager unable to register for internal subscriptions. Now this message isn't really a deploy failure. We're going to talk about it in just a minute. Now, I really look at deploy problems as being one where you got a negative response, which is a good sign in the sense that, yes, the deploy has failed, but your broker is functional, and it's responded back saying it's unable to process the deploy. The second one is no response, which is really not a good thing to happen because we do expect, as a minimum, we do expect deploys to return timeout messages. Now, the third is, of course, infrastructure-related errors, and we're going to look at this at each one of these categories. Moving on to the next page, which is page 16, negative response could be the BIP2080 and BIP2066E errors, where the admin agent and the execution group timeout timed out, processing, and deploy. Now, the timeout parameters can be tuned, and these are defined by the configuration timeout and configuration delay timeout, which are attributes on the broker. The default, I believe, is 300 seconds and 60 seconds. However, this depends on the complexity of the deploy, the number of flows that you have within your execution group, and so there is a good possibility that you might have to tune your timeouts depending on your environment, and this is very specific to your environment. And in the sense that maybe your production broker might not be running the same number of execution groups as your development broker, and so you might have to look at each of these environments and arrive at a value, so the timeout values that works for you. Now, the common question we get asked is there a formula that we can provide to arrive at these timeout values? I'm afraid not, since these pretty much depend on the environment and the complexity of the flow. If you have large flows, if you have large execution groups, there's a good possibility that deploys you might have to tune these timeout values. Now, another piece of information that you need to know is when a deploy is being processed or is issued, the flows to which the deploys perform must completely finish processing of the current message. And it could be a completion to success or a completion to failure, but the point being the message that's midstream in the flow or flows which are deployed must end before the deploy can take effect. And the reason for that is these flows have to be quest to pick up the change in the deploy and then restart it. Moving on to the second type of deploy issue, which is no response from deploy. This is a scenario that I'd really like to avoid because there's a good possibility that deploys did not respond because of infrastructure problems like MQ or database issues. Now, there's also a possibility that the configuration delay timeout and configuration timeout have been set to very high values, and so the execution group that's deployed to is taking that amount of time, yet again, depending on what the extensiveness of the flows. So this could in turn cause, again, deploys not to respond. But eventually, I would expect a timeout to occur, so you should expect a response back whenever you issue a deploy. Moving on to the next page, which is page 18. The common infrastructure problems that we see from an MQ point of view are messages too big for queue manager or channel. And the queue in question here would be the transmit queues that are pushing these messages out to the broker. And because the broker's internal queues, which are the system broker queues, are defined with max message size of 100 meg, while, as you probably know, MQ by default defines queues with a max message size of 4 meg. So it's a good idea to look at and increase this value in case you have large message flows that you're deploying or if you're initiating large deploys. Besides these, you could encounter other MQ errors which will impact your deploy. And likewise, there could be database exceptions which might severely affect deploys. Now, MQ and database exceptions, both of these are propagated or externalized by the broker through the broker messages BIP 2070 and BIP 2322. MQ channel errors, though, are not reported by the broker. The reason for that is MQ channel errors are internal to MQ and really do not MQ applications do not have access to those errors. And As you probably know, MQ reports messages in its own AMQ error log. So it's a good idea if you have a situation where deploys are not returning any messages, it's a good idea to check that your channels are up and running and they're successfully pushing messages back and forth. Moving on to the next page, which is page 19, BIP-1536E is an error that you might see returning on a deploy, which means Configuration Manager is unable to register for subscriptions. And these are status subscriptions, or I should say, these are status topics. And let me talk a little bit about how this works. When a deploy is issued, the Configuration Manager, along with the deploy, subscribes to some internal topics, so the broker can publish status messages which the Configuration Manager picks up and provides to the toolkit to update and reflect the changes. So with that in mind, when you see a BIP-1536E, this does not necessarily mean that your deploy failed, but what this means, though, is that the status you're looking at in the toolkit could be incorrect. One reason, or the main reason why this could happen, is because when the Configuration Manager registers for registers subscriptions on the status topics, the broker processes the subscription registration and uses the user ID it receives to put publication messages onto the subscription queue, which is System Broker Admin Reply. And when it does that MQ put, MQ on the broker queue manager tries to authenticate, and if the Configuration Manager service ID is not existing on the broker machine, that authentication will fail, resulting in the BIP-1536E exception on the Configuration Manager side. And if you look closely on the broker side, you will see a BIP-7150 exception recorded in the syslog. So you must make sure that the Configuration Manager service ID is defined on the broker machine and it does have access to the transmit queue, which is the main queue on the broker machine pushing messages over or sending messages over to the Configuration Manager. Besides these, of course, there could be other native exceptions like ESQL syntax errors or out-of-memory errors or environment-related errors, which you might have to watch out for if you're having deploy problems. Moving on to the next page, up until now we talked about deploy problems and the type of problems you could encounter. Let's talk a little bit about recovery and hints and tips on how you can recover. It's advisable to reduce the scope of deploy. The scope of deploy and go with delta deploys always, which in turn reduces the size of deploy message. It increases, pushing out a small deploy message increases performance of deploys. You get faster deploy responses, and also it's from manageable because you'll be doing as minimum as one change at a time, though of course I understand it's not realistic at times where you might have to do much more multiple changes at one time. But it's strongly recommended you try to minimize the scope of what you're deploying so it's manageable and it gives you good performance. You do have to acknowledge that complex flows or large flows or large execution group. By large execution group, I mean execution groups that have extensive number of flows. They do take time to deploy, so it's important you arrive at a good timeout values. Moving on to the next page, page 21. If you have a deploy problem, a good thing to try is remove the change that you affected, or in this case, you can remove the message flow, and try and get back to the previous state, and that way at least you will be at a consistent state and you can try the deploy again and check if it works. Now if problem still persists, And if it is possible, one of the things we request you to try is to either deploy to a new execution group just to validate the message flow or the deploy that you're performing, rather than pushing it out to an existing execution group. For test purposes, you might want to deploy to a newly created execution group and check if that deploy works. Now, if you have a problem with that deploy, at least you're not affecting your other execution groups, and it's much more manageable to troubleshoot the problem. If you have monitoring tools and in your environment, now sometimes if whatever suggestions I've discussed do not work, we do recommend you stop the broker, clean up system broker queues, and restart. Now, this is rather extreme, and I do acknowledge that, but if you have monitoring applications, these monitoring applications interact with the broker to system broker queues, and at times we've found if those messages are stuck on system broker queues, there's a good possibility that your deploy message is stuck behind them, and the broker has no way to get to your deploy message. So if possible, we do request that you stop the broker, clear system broker queues on the broker queue manager, and restart your broker and check if deploy works. Moving on to the next page, which is page 21. If you call us for help, and of course, when you are at a point where your deploys are absolutely not working despite stopping the broker and cleaning system broker queues, that's a point where we have an environment variable that we recommend you set to provide more diagnostic information in the system logs, and the environment variable is MQSI_show_deploy. Setting this environment variable reports extensive information. It pretty much shows every logical step of deploy operation, and it'll quickly help isolate the problem in terms of where exactly it's getting stuck. Now, a broker restart is needed to pick up this change. Moving on to the next common problem, which we see very frequently. Is there a leak, is there a memory leak in the data flow engine process? Now, this is a question that we get asked when large messages are being processed or there's complex activity going on and users observe the data flow engine steadily consumes or grows in memory usage. You have to know that the amount of memory data flow engine uses depends on a number of factors, mainly the complexity of the flow, the number of flows deployed, and also not just the complexity and the number of flows deployed, but the types of messages processing. If you have a single message flow that processes an extensive number of message types, there's a good possibility that different message types, as they're being processed, might have different memory requirements. Memory does increase. The data flow engine does increase in memory when processing large messages. And when you have more message flows deployed to an execution group, each message flow runs as a thread, as we discussed earlier, and effectively what you have is a multi-threaded process where different threads, depending on what they're processing, could have requirement for more storage, which they request from the process, and if the process cannot satisfy this request, it could in turn request the operating system to increase for more memory, which would in turn cause the data flow engine to grow in memory usage. Eventually, we do expect data flow engine to reach a plateau once it has acquired all the memory it needs to process different types of messages or whatever message flows you've deployed. Now, the message flows, after each message is processed, they do issue a free on all the storage acquired. However, and what I'm going to say probably is very specific to Unix platforms, there's no way to release memory from a process back to the operating system on Unixes, and this is done for performance reasons by the operating system. It's pretty much the way Unixes work, where the data flow engine does maintain this free pages and holds on to it, expecting that more further requests might might come for this memory which it tries to reuse. And that's the point where, which is the ideal point for the data flow engine, and that's what I was talking about, reaching a plateau or a stable state. Now, memory is returned back from the process to the operating system, and the process in question shows the data flow engine, only when it's terminated. And you could, we do provide a command to restart data flow engine, which is MQSR reload, broker space dash E, and the data flow engine, the execution group name, which in turn will restart the data flow engine. Now, do keep in mind that you probably do not want to do this during business hours. You want to, if you have a need to do this, you might want to do this when there are no messages being processed, just for the very basic reason that if there are any messages being processed, they will roll back, since effectively you're restarting the execution group. Processing large messages, we talked about it a little bit ago, they are resource intensive. Moving on to the next common problem, my message flow is hanging. An observation that you would arrive at when you see messages are not being picked up from the queue, and probably your monitoring applications are ringing bells saying the queue is not being serviced. A message flow really is a stateless engine, if you will, and it acquires a state as and when it picks up a message and keeps processing. And once it delivers that message to the destination, it's ready to pick up the next message. Now, as long as there is a message stuck in the flow, either due to an inadvertent loop of any kind or due to no destination, no way to put to a destination, this would cause the message flow to process that message repeatedly, and so the net effect being it will not be able to pick up further messages from the queue, resulting in the view that the message flow is hanging because no messages are being consumed from the queue. Do make sure that you handle exceptions via your cache terminals, fail terminals, and it's recommended as a minimum that you do have the dead letter queue defined on the queue manager for the broker, which is a good MQ recommendation as well, because if there's no way to go for the message being processed by the flow, there must at least be one output or one place where it can be put to, which would be the dead letter queue. Now, if you do want transaction rollback and reprocessing, you might want to ensure that the backup queue is set. Moving on to the next page, we're on page 27. If you're using aggregate functionality, do keep in mind that aggregate reply node works effectively as an MQ input node in the sense that it receives multiple replies and performs the aggregation and generates the combined output message, and the key point there is it does not, the message being output from the aggregate reply node will not have an MQMD header, so it cannot be put to the queue directly. Any attempts to put to the queue will cause an exception, and this is pretty much applicable to all terminals on the aggregate reply node output, which is unknown, timeout, catch, or failure terminals, and of course the out terminal. So it's important that you do add MQMD when you're processing a message beyond aggregate reply node, otherwise that would cause in a loop, resulting yet again in a message flow hanging problem or the observation. Moving on to the next common problem, page 28. Message flow debugger not working, and this is applicable to version 5 and version 6. The common problems that we get reported is list of execution groups not showing up, and if the execution groups do show up, then the list of message flows are not showing up. Version 5 and version 6 products, broker products, use a component called Agent Controller to provide debugging functionality. The agent controller by default uses a port 10,002 for communication between the toolkit and the broker. And you can check the status for this port. It must have a listen status, and the command you can use is a netstat command. Moving on to the next page, it's important if you have a firewall that you disable it. We're going to talk about it in just a minute, and I'm talking about a firewall between the toolkit and the agent controller. Before we talk about why you need to disable the firewall, the other information that I want to share with you is the default port of 10,002. In case you have applications, different applications that are using that port, you can change that default port on the rack server as well as in the toolkit. I've given the exact files where you need to change, which is serviceconfig.xml, or in the toolkit, it's Windows Preference Flow Debug, and you can come up with your own port. And you have to make sure that the ports are open between the toolkit and rack. And more importantly, if you have a firewall, that needs to be disabled because of the way debugging works. Debugging or communication between toolkit and agent controller uses two channels. We tend to refer to as the control channel and data channel. The control channel uses the port 10,002, which you have a way to change. However, communication through the data channel is done through a dynamic port. Once the control channel establishes communication, the toolkit picks up or dynamically associates a port for data communication and opens up a second channel for providing debug information for the users. And so, since there's no way to specify or change that port, and it's a dynamic port, it's important that you disable firewall between the toolkit and the agent controller. The agent controller, it's recommended that you start agent controller before you start the broker if you're having debugger problems, because broker registers to agent controller on startup. And there is a way to limit hosts that connect to the agent controller. Now, if you have debugger problems, I recommend you allow all hosts. Yet again, that's the last bullet on page 29, where you can go to serviceconfig.xml and change that attribute to allow all hosts. Moving on to page 30, agent controller has its own log, which is under agent controller install config directory called servicelog.log, which shows excellent information on this communication going back and forth, and this is very useful information if you have any issues. You can increase the log level from debug to high, or you can increase the logging detail to a low level so you can see a lot more details. But of course, I think by the time you probably, I suppose you probably would call us for help, and we would be requesting you to provide servicelog.log. Lastly, just for completeness, do realize that there is a new version of Agent Controller provided to FixPack 3. So in case you're running with older FixPacks and you're planning to upgrade, do note that you need to install the new Agent Controller provided to FixPack 3. Moving on to the next common problem, page 31. Toolkit is slow, terminates. And the common problems we see are performance-related, saving of a project, or creating a bar file taking a lot of time, debugging issues, you know, running through a debugger, processing a message through a debugger is very slow, or toolkit consuming high CPU, or abandoning, shutting down due to JVM exceptions. These are some of the common problems that we investigate pretty frequently. Do realize that the version 5, version 6 toolkit, and I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this is applicable to version 5 and version 6 and not 2.1. At version 5 and version 6, the toolkit provides ESQL validation functionality, which is very memory intensive. And moving on to page 32, there is a way you can disable ESQL validation through Windows Preferences ESQL Mapping and Validation. Do realize, yet again, with large projects or complex flows, do take time, and they are resource intensive. And also, the important point to note is if you're debugging, I'd recommend to use small messages because the toolkit, the parser used in the debugger is not the same parser as used in the broker. The broker's parsers are much more optimized for performance, including functionality like partial parsing, while the toolkit pretty much parses out your complete message tree, and you can pretty much appreciate what would happen if you try to debug a large message. It's going to consume a lot of resources, take a lot of time to generate the parse tree. One common way we found out to help with toolkit issues is by tuning the heap size for the JVM for the toolkit application, which is MQSI Studio. The default JVM heap size used by the toolkit is pretty much the Java default, which is half of the real memory on the box. Moving on to page 32, you can tune the JVM and increase it using the command MQSI Studio-VM-args with a dash XMX, and that value is in megabytes, so you can increase the storage of the toolkit, and hopefully that would help. At least from our observations, it does help quite a bit with performance issues. Moving on to the next problem, which is page 34, MQRC object in use, which is an MQRC 2042 exception when trying to modify a queue. Though I mentioned in the main bullet that's MQ input node, I pretty much would like to state it is applicable for input and output nodes. When you have a flow deployed, the queues, the flow would be holding on to the handles, the queue handles, and if you want to make any changes to the queue, more specifically if you're using an alias queue just because in production you want to dynamically change the destination, so if you are using a remote queue, do keep in mind that you will not be able to change the queue attributes. You will not be able to make those changes because these queues have open handles. With the first deploy of the message flow causes the queues to be open, and of course, that would be the input queues. The first message that you process will cause the output queues to be open. And you really must remove the message flow if you have to change some of the queue properties. Moving on to page 35, it's a table I put together to show you how a broker or an execution group maps to as an MQ application. When the execution group first starts, that's when it establishes and gets a connection handle to the queue manager. A deploy of a message flow is the first time it does an open of the input queue. The start of the message flow enables MQGets, and of course during processing it does MQGets inputs. Stopping of a message flow, now it's important to note, stopping of a message flow stops the get from the queue, but it does not release the open handle on the queue. So if you closely look at the queue handles, you'll see that the flows would still be holding on to the queues, even though you've stopped the flow. The reason for this is, again, it's performance, and we do not want to stop or release queue handles, since stopping a flow really means you want to temporarily disable MQGets on the queue, and then not necessarily means that you want to release handles or change the release the open queue handles. Now, to really change or make any changes to the queue, you must remove the message flow and make your changes and redeploy. Removing execution group from the broker is maps onto disconnecting from the queue manager, and of course, by this you're totally removing the execution group, which includes pretty much removing all message flows that it's running. Moving on to the final common problem that I have today, which is on page 36. How can a configuration manager be moved to different server without deleting brokers? Let's talk. This is a requirement that we and a question that we come across frequently. And the reason for this could be you might want to move to a bigger server, and we know hardware is becoming inexpensive by the day. So, and also, it's a very painstaking process if you were to completely rebuild your brokers. And so what users want to know is a quick way to move the configuration manager from server A to server B, leaving their brokers running and not having to really stop production or schedule an outage of any kind. Let's talk about WMQI 2.1 and WBI Brokers version 5 and see how this works, and then I have a single file which talks about version 6, since version 6 has some enhancements in this area. The procedure you might want to use to move a configuration manager to a new broker, The procedure you want to use to move a configuration manager from one server to a different server is make sure your users are disconnected. And if you're using Control Center for, if you're on 2.1 using Control Center, you definitely want to check in all the resources. Once the users are disconnected, ensure that the connection between the configuration manager queue manager and the broker queue manager is stopped as well. Go ahead and stop the channels. And the third step would be to take a backup of the databases being used, because those are the databases contain the main information, and you need those to restore on the new server. Moving on to page 37, once you have restored your database on the new server, go ahead and create your configuration manager. And the key point when you're creating your configuration manager is you must use the same user ID password for databases. And you must use the same queue manager name, since there is information about this queue manager name in the database. So you definitely want to use the same queue manager name. And likewise, ID and password for the databases, because the schemas in the database are created using this user ID. And once you create this configuration manager, it must it will be able to look at the data and pick up and recognize your environment and the broker topology. The following steps are reestablishing connectivity back between the configuration manager, that is the new configuration manager on the new server, to the broker queue manager. While in the broker box, you might have to modify the existing sender channel and change the host name to connect to the new configuration manager server. Go ahead and start your configuration manager, and you're back in business. Pretty much you can let your users in, and you can leave your brokers running during this move as you make this move to the new configuration manager server. Moving on to file 38, which is page 38. As I was mentioning a little while ago, with WebSphere Message Broker version 6, this area has been greatly enhanced, and there is functionality provided to backup and restore your configuration manager repository. As is stated on the introductory page, the in version 6, Configuration Manager does not have a dependency on external databases. It uses its own internal repository. And so moving a Configuration Manager between servers has become a much easy, much easier. And it's pretty much through a couple of commands. You can backup your Configuration Manager using the command NQSI Backup Config Manager and specify a directory path name to which it would generate a zip file, which would contain all the objects in the repository. You can move that zip file to wherever you want to your new server, and restore this archive file using NQSI Restore Configuration Manager, and go ahead and create your Configuration Manager. Now, do keep in mind, once you create your Configuration Manager, some of the steps that I've listed on page 37, I'm going to step back a minute here just to complete the version 6 move. Some of the steps I've listed towards the end of page 37 are equally applicable. Things like, you know, changing your channels to connect to the queue manager, and and modifying the broker queue manager, or broker modifying the channel and the broker queue manager to talk to the configuration manager, queue manager. These are the things that you must do. So the steps on version 6 would be, moving back to page 38, the steps on Web3 message broker version 6 would be, backup your configuration manager repository using NQSN Backup Config Manager, move the archive files to the new server, restore the configuration manager, the archive that you moved using NQSI Restore Config Manager, create your channel to the on the configuration manager queue manager to the broker queue manager, modify the existing channel on the broker queue manager to talk to the new configuration manager, start your configuration manager and allow your toolkit users in, and you're back in business. This concludes the common problems that I want to talk to you about today. We're pretty much close to the end here. All I have is a few files or pages, if you're looking at the PDF file, listing out the various URLs, which I highly recommend you bookmark because they provide a wealth of information and they're very useful for users working with the message broker. Now, I have also listed the news groups that are available, and where they're very active news groups in case you have any questions. Again, there are a lot of users out there using with the product, and that's another good source of information. Further, moving on to page 43, there are some additional WebSphere product resources for you. And that concludes this webcast. I'll be happy to take any questions at this time, and I hope the information we discussed in the past 1 hour has been helpful to you.
We actually need to go back to Kimberly, and she's going to take the questions for us. Kimberly, are you there?
Yes. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch tone phone. If you're using speakerphone, please pick up your handset and then press star and the number 1. Matt Hyatt, your line is open.
Hi, how you doing? Great presentation. Earlier in the presentation, you had said it might take a considerable time for a large number of message flows. What do you guys consider as a large number?
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for your question. I'd like to start by saying it's a very open-ended question, just because no two environments are similar, and large number of message flows, when I was referring to large number of message flows, I've worked with environments which had in excess of 30 message flows per execution group, and I really consider that as a very large number of message flows. And typically, my recommendation in this area has been 10 message flows per execution group if possible. Now, you also have to keep in mind, and this is where I was saying earlier that this is an open-ended question, because the complexity of the message flow, the number of nodes you have in the message flow, the logic that you have in the message flow does play a big part when you are coming up with this definition. So difficult to provide a good guideline and say, yes, this is what is considered as a large message flow, because it has quite a bit of dependency on the logic that you have. I mean, we have come across single flows which have a couple of hundred or more nodes, where some of the compute nodes we're using had about 5,000 lines of ESQL. Now, that's a single message flow, and I would say that's an extremely complex and large message flow. And probably if you have message flows of, you know, which are that extensive, you might want to try and reduce the number of those type of flows you deploy to an execution group, maybe to a much less number than even 10, just because of the amount of resources that it might consume. While on the other end, if you have a message flow that's using large number of nodes, but the processing being done is pretty basic, then you can increase the number of workflows that you have deployed to the execution group. I hope that gives you some kind of a guideline there, Matt, and I'm sorry I did not have a much better answer for you in terms of defining or coming up with a conclusive way to find out exactly what is large and what is not large, just because it has an extensive amount of dependency on your logic, your ESQL and transformations that you're using and you're putting together in your message flow.
Okay,
does that help, Matt?
Yes.
Thank you.
Also have another problem or question. The memory leak problem you spoke of earlier, does that apply only to the Unix platforms or is that ZOS as well?
The memory leak problem that I was discussing is mainly for Unix platforms. However, thanks for bringing it up, Matt. I wanted to mention that across the board on all platforms, when you are processing large messages, you must expect the storage to increase. And having said that, yes, the memory leak problem that I've discussed is more specific to Unixes. Since we're on the subject, I'd like to mention that there are a few fixes, known defects in this area that have been fixed at FixPack 5. So I would recommend that you review the defect list for FixPack 5, and if you have a problem or if you have a situation where you're finding those defects are applicable, you definitely want to look at applying FixPack 5. And I believe off the top, I think there are at least three defects in this area that have been fixed in FixPack 5.
Great, thank you.
The next question comes from Jack Kaw.
Hi, Kimberly. This is really for you. The URL I went to, there's no PDF that I can download. So is there any chance I can get one?
Hey, this is Scott. If you go to IBM.com and in the top search box at the top of the page, type in 700-6694 and do search, you should get one hit, and in that hit should be the PDF.
Thank you so much.
The next question comes from Faraz Kata.
Hi. I have a question regarding how the MQSI report properties are being can be used.
Okay, Farah. Then, and I think you want to know how you can use MQSI report properties.
Yeah. Well, there's some documentation I went ahead and I had a flow that I deployed, I believe, successfully, as I could see the flow. I mean, I could see the handles on the queue, but when I ran the flow in MQSI report properties, it reported a BIP2087E and a BIP4041E and BIP2212E and a BIP8036E. There were four messages that I received afterwards. I'm just trying to figure out how I can debug that further. Thanks.
MQSI report properties is a command that, as you know, lists out the properties for the message flow, and these are internal properties. Some of them are tunables, and typically this is an area that we offer recommendations depending on the problem. So whatever I say is not applicable to all environments, because we do some investigation before we come up with any recommendation on this. The way MQSI report properties work is quite similar to how a deploy works, where it generates a request message to the execution group to be processed and returns the reply back to the command. Now, the errors that you mentioned does indicate that there is an exception. With the BIP2087 is suggesting that there's an exception, and I cannot really comment further, I'm afraid, on this unless I take a closer look at the command that you're running, the entire command that you're running, and also look at the execution group. Now, one thing that you can try is you can check if you can issue basic deploys and see if the execution group is responding, and if it is, that will validate that the MQSI report properties must return. I'll need to specifically look at the command that you're issuing to really come up with some recommendations. Back to you. Does it help?
Yeah. It does a little. The command that I issued was MQSI report properties, the queue manager name, minus E, the execution group name, minus O, the message flow name, and minus A.
Right. Now, one thing you want to try is, if you can, check if you can issue a basic deploy, something as simple as MQ input node, output node, to that execution group and see if that responds back. Because of the way report properties works is quite similar to the way deploys work, it might be shedding some further light on the problem.
Okay, I will test that and see. Thanks.
Yeah, and my email address is on the starting page of this webcast, and I'd like to say that if there's anything I can help you with, I welcome you to email me, though, of course, there is a good possibility that once you contact me and I look at the issues, I might recommend that you open a PMR if one is needed. Or if it's a simple issue, I'll definitely get back to you.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch tone phone. At this time, there are no further questions.
Okay, at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you and appreciate your participation. And remember, the replay will be available on the Technical Exchange site within the next 2 days. And thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Prasad, for the presentation.
Thank you, Scotty. Thank you, everyone.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.